Hi and welcome to another podcast from The Human Diver, where we are looking to apply counter-errorism techniques in diving. By that we mean human factors and non-technical skills. Our goal is to give you the knowledge and skills so that your dives are safer and more enjoyable. The podcast consists of audio blogs which have been published on our website. Show notes will be provided so you can dig deeper if you want. Ready to jump in? Recently, there have been a number of high-profile incidents in diving, in which the decisions made appear incredulous given the outcome. Using a phrase from Todd Conklin, a US-based high-performance team developer and safety advocate, the outcomes, while sad in many cases, are not the most interesting part. It is the decision-making process which led to them which is interesting. You could say that they are unsurprising or normal. In fact, in 1984, Chris Perrow wrote a book entitled Normal Accidents, in which he describes the facts that most of accidents in high-risk operations are normal, in that we know they could happen, we just don't know where and when, and given our limited personal and organisational capacity to process massive amounts of information, it is no surprise that they slip by our attention and we make flawed decisions. It is this combination of often discrete decisions which leads to disaster. That is what this blog post is about, decision making, and why. In hindsight, we often view an adverse event with clarity compared to those who were involved at the time, and why we are unable to rationalize their thought processes which led to their demise. I am not biased. Yes, you are. We all are. In the first part, we will look at the key biases we are exposed to when it comes to examining adverse events. The first of these is hindsight bias. This is where we make the assumption that we knew what the outcome would have been if we had been placed in that same position, with the same information, training, and environmental or physical cues. It is incredibly difficult to isolate this bias and remove it from our thought process, other than by asking the simple question, how did it make sense to those involved to behave in the manner they did? An example of this might be the close call which the National Park Service Submerged Resource Center team had 3 years ago when their chief scientist had an oxygen toxicity-induced seizure at 33 meters, 110 feet, on their VR Technology Sentinel and was recovered by the buddy and dive team. The technical reason for the event was that two of the three oxygen cells were current limited, and due to the voting logic within the system, the controller drove the PO2 in the loop up to more than three. The reason they were current limited was because of their age and should have been replaced. They were 33 months old. You might ask why they weren't replaced in a timely manner. The following provides a brief explanation in terms of decision making. The team had been diving a mixture of AP Inspirations and VR Sentinels. The AP units had always had their cells replaced by AP when they went back for a service. The Sentinels, when they went back for their service, had come back with a test sheet saying the cells were operating at 100% to spec. The assumption on the part of the team was that the cells had been changed based on their previous experience with AP units. This, in fact, was not the case. Although they did have a note included in the units to say the cells should be changed every 18 months. In addition, the service had happened 4 months before the event, so there is an ongoing assumption that the unit is good for another 8 months or so, especially as the unit was not dived in the first 3 of those 4 months. Further, the day before the unit had performed flawlessly with no current limiting. In hindsight, the team should have checked the cell dates before each dive, or at least during each unit assembly, but they didn't because their mental model of the world was different to reality. This shortfall has been addressed since the event. In addition, there were many other issues which contributed to the event, but have not been covered here due to brevity of this article. This brings us nicely onto the next bias, outcome bias, and how we often judge the severity of the decision-making process based on the outcome we perceive. As another example, reflect on the following. A team of 2 full cave certified divers were traveling into a cave system where number 2 had been before, but the lead diver hadn't. After approximately 30 minutes, they passed through a cenote with amazing shafts of light shining down, which took their attention away from the line whilst they kept swimming. After another 5 minutes or so, the second diver started to get an uneasy feeling about where they were because the cave didn't look right. He stopped signaled the lead that something wasn't right, turned around, swam back up the line, and found the jump, which they had swum over without realizing it because their attention was drawn to the shafts of light. Coincidentally, they had encountered another line just beyond theirs, which because of their brief distraction, they followed because they had missed the jump. If the second diver had not been in that cave before, he would not have had that uneasy feeling, and they would have carried on until something was really obviously wrong from the plan or brief, or when they reached their gas turn pressures. Now consider what the narrative would have read if they had had an emergency which necessitated a gas sharing blind exit, and they reached the terminal point of the line which they were on, and then had to conduct a blind jump which they were unable to do, and as a consequence drowned. The narrative would likely say, they conducted a jump without a line in place. How stupid. They broke a golden rule of cave diving. In the first case, it is also easy to say they should have paid more attention. But the use of should have or could have does not help prevent future adverse events. How severe and how prevalent are such unnoticed blind jumps? After a quick chat with colleagues, I found it's not that uncommon. Decision making is complicated. So if we have these major biases impacting our view of decision making after the event, what informs us of our decisions during the activity? It is complicated. It involves situational awareness, decision making, and a feedback loop to inform future decision making strategies. It also involves the goals and objectives we are aiming for, as this tunnels our view of the world. We primarily look for things which confirm our predicted outcomes. It involves our long-term memories and the experiences we have built up through life, training, and previous dives. It involves the equipment we are using and the environment we are in, and whether those are improving or removing our mental capacity. Ensley's situation awareness model shows the linkages in this decision making and situational awareness. There's a link to it in the show notes. This is why situation awareness is not just about what is going on around you right now. It is how we perceive and process the information, and then an ability to project it into the future. However, to simplify, we have three key ways of making decisions: skills-based, rules-based, and knowledge-based. The terms skill, rule, and knowledge-based information processing refer to the degree of conscious control exercised by the individual over his or her activities. Knowledge-based refers to an almost completely conscious manner. In the case of a beginner diver learning to put up a DSMB for the first time, they are solving the problem as they are going along, learning the steps which make up the skill. In the case of an experienced diver, this might be a novel situation such as being in a wreck and a small collapse happens and they have to solve the problem dynamically. The skill-based mode refers to the smooth execution of highly practiced, largely physical actions in which there is virtually no conscious monitoring. Skill-based responses are generally initiated by some specific event, for example, the requirement to dump gas from the BCD as the diver ascends. The highly practiced operation of dumping the gas will then be executed largely without conscious thought. In highly skilled individuals, the error rates are in the order of 1 in 10,000. However, when we move to knowledge-based decision-making, where we have to use previous experiences to solve the problem and come up with a viable solution, then it drops to 1 in 2 to 1 in 10. Another category of information processing that has been identified involves the use of rules. These rules may have been learned as a result of undertaking diver training or by diving with more experienced divers. The level of conscious control is intermediate between that of the knowledge and skill-based modes. Often what is missing in the real world is a feedback loop to help us determine whether the decisions we have made are the good ones or could have been better. Just because the decision, dive, didn't end up with an injury or death, it doesn't mean it was the best or safest way of doing it. Safety is a relative concept considering the risk of any dive is death. Experts more often make better decisions because they have more experiences to refer to, bottom of Ensley's model. To create this knowledge, they need to have practiced and failed and learned why something is done a certain way and why the failure happened. Novices, when faced with the same situation, will try to refer to their long-term memory stores and see what matches as close to what is perceived. Sometimes all they have is a best guess, which isn't the best way of solving such problems, but it might be the only way. Knowledge is created by understanding the why, not just repeating the how. Solutions. The paradox is that as diving becomes safer and equipment doesn't fail as often, the evidence to show there is a problem diminishes. This doesn't mean that training should necessarily be simplified, because the risk of a system failing is still there. The problem is that as we simplify the training system and reduce the amount of stress training delivered to divers during training, we are creating a system whereby when the failure does happen, the skills aren't there to execute it, and the knowledge isn't there either. The issue is further compounded because instructors are now in the situation where they have limited experience of failures and the need to problem solve in real time given ambiguous circumstances, and therefore they are unable to teach their students what they have personally learned. This is especially true of rebreather diving. To combat this, there is an attitudinal change required. Diving can be safe, but at the same time there needs to be a true recognition of all involved, from open water student dive 1 and above, that there is a risk of death on every dive. It is often the known unknowns that will pose a problem, and we need knowledge-based decision-making skills to prevent that event from ending in disaster. That means we need to build contextual and relevant experience, and not rules-based decision-making processes. Finally, when we read about incidents or fatalities, we need to recognize that in the majority of cases, it was likely that the situation they faced, or the precursors to it, exceeded their decision-making processes, either through lack of knowledge to problem solve, the lack of an understanding of the relevance of the rules, or because they just didn't have the skills needed. The fact it ended up with someone scared, injured, or dead is just an outcome. We need to focus on the activities and decisions prior to the event, not just immediately prior either, and fix that decision-making process if we are to make diving safer and reduce unnecessary risk. Remember, hindsight bias is incredibly powerful, so ask yourself, how did it make sense to them, given their experience, mindset, training, emotional state, and so on? Do not use your experience to make their decisions. You know the certain outcome they did not. Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you'd like to know more about what was discussed in this episode, head over to the Human Diver website at thehumandiver.com, where you will find details about our education programs, the If Only documentary, the book Under Pressure, and the many, many blogs we have published there. If you think others should listen and learn, consider sharing the link. Thank you.